Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. It is Brian behind the glass, and it is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We have a very busy show for you today. On the day the NFL season kicks off, Kevin Bowen will be joining us at 3:15 in the next 15 minutes to go beyond enemy lines. We'll go beyond enemy lines, talk about the Colts, see what the Texans have on their hands coming up on Sunday. Lee Sterling handing out winners. Brian made a little bit of money because of Lee Sterling this past week. Your parlay, what was the plus what?
I turned a $50 bet into $661.
Okay, so a little bit.
I don't know what the plus number one, because Sean placed it for me, but I basically took all of Lee's bets last week except for the UT game and put that on a parlay and won.
Very good. Adam Ronis will be joining us at 4:15 to get all of the fantasy questions. Well, we're not going to let you ask fantasy questions because no one cares about your fantasy team, but all the important fantasy questions we'll ask Adam Ronis, Bad Take Boulevard, and we'll talk to Dr. Jesse Morse at 5:15 about this little Kyle Tucker. Hopefully we see him tomorrow, but Kyle Tucker, just the drama, the saga. We'll get a medical opinion instead of our medical opinions. We'll talk to him later on in the program as well. I'm sure we'll break down this Astros game that just finished a little bit earlier in great detail as well. But last night's game, I don't know where you're at, but you can go ahead, in my opinion, and scratch the whole Spencer Arrighetti starting a postseason game for you. August Pitcher of the month, rookie player of the month, I should say. Fantastic. All of that really got it going. It helps you with the five-man, six-man rotation. It makes you bullish about the future of this rotation. But we saw why veteran experience does matter when it comes to, you know, being able to get out of the first inning. Just get out of the first inning. So Arrighetti, with that start last night, I can't trust him. I can't trust him going into the postseason. He's had too many blow-ups this season. I'm out with Spencer Arrighetti on making a postseason start.
You kind of read my mind when I looked at the rundown, because when I was watching it all implode, and I'm thinking to myself, that's the difference between a hiccup and a blow-up. The fact of the matter is that Justin Verlander could have a hiccup enough that he would keep you in the ball game, and even if he left the game shorter than normal, or in his normal five innings, he probably would have given up about four runs in that game and kept you somewhat above water and in it. Arrighetti, on the other hand, we've seen it before earlier in the season. When he goes, and he goes full tilt. And, you know, that thing just kept getting from bad to worse to, like, completely out of hand in the first inning, and you basically had no shot. And that's something you can't take the risk of having happen when you're in a playoff series. No matter what. But when you're handing the baseball in such an important event as, like, one of your top three pitchers, or in the case of a longer series, four pitchers, I just can't see them doing that right now.
Yesterday was a bit of Murphy's Law when it comes to Arrighetti's start, because he didn't pitch well. First batter, home run. He's not getting the swing and miss that he normally gets. He was asked after the game, too, if he felt like he was tipping, and Arrighetti's like, I really doubt it. Said if he was, then that's on him for allowing it to get to that point. And he said he would do his due diligence to see if he was, but he completely dismissed the idea that he was tipping. I think part of it was, hey, I'm going to take accountability for my poor outing. Now, he did allude to the fact that he felt there were times earlier this year that he was tipping. I don't know if that was the case. Like, the pitches he was executing weren't very good. There was times where he got soft contact. Like, there was times when the defense could have helped him out. You know, that little fly ball into center field. Tough play. If Chaz McCormick makes that play, it's a really good play. So I'm not blaming Chaz McCormick, but make a really good play. Help your pitcher out. The Jeremy Pena ball up the middle, that should have been an error, was not called an error, which really hurt Spencer Arrighetti's line score. So, like, everything that could go wrong in the first inning yesterday went wrong. Arrighetti was poor, wasn't very good. Tip your cap, I guess, to the Cincinnati Red Stockings. And then the defense wasn't very good. That didn't help Spencer Arrighetti behind him either.
Yeah, defense has been a theme lately, and it's frustrating. I think, you know, we'll talk about, like, as you mentioned, today's game, at least from that standpoint. I thought it was better, but I think that, you know, Pena's kind of in his head a little bit now, too. But it hasn't been great lately. And you look at it and you say, okay, it's got to be better, and we know that. We've discussed it. But overall, I just think that, you know, this is one of those series where it's hard to put your finger on the fact that whenever you play the Orioles, you play big series or big pitchers, this team just seems to rise to the top. And when you play teams that are down and out, like the White Sox, where you've had a hiccup or two, like the Reds, where you just can't seem to figure out a way, that's what makes it so frustrating, because you're coming off a roll where you dominated the Royals. You looked like you were just going to coast past the Mariners, and you were going to ride, you had a legit chance of catching the two teams in front of you to get a bye, and then you just completely crapped the bed for three games, and that's what makes you scratch your head.
Yeah, it was not a good series for the Astros, but talking about it from the Arrighetti perspective, yeah, I mean, you have three guys ahead of you that you rather have in a playoff rotation. You know, we were kicking around the idea of Arrighetti or, like, Kikuchi, depending on the other team's lineup. Well, that conversation's over. It's Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. Kikuchi's higher on the pecking order than Spencer Arrighetti. And will this change? Probably. Like, you still have four more starts for all of these guys. But your dudes up top are Fromber and Hunter Brown. There's no debate there. You say Kikuchi to me is your number three.
And Kikuchi.
That's right. And if you're having the conversation after that, Verlander, Blanco, Arrighetti. Like, I'd probably rather have Blanco, but they're going to give it to Verlander. Yeah, that's your four-man playoff rotation. Now, what could really throw a wrench into this is that the Astros are probably going to be in the wild card series if they're fortunate enough to hang on to win the division.
Yeah, look, I mean, everybody's doing you a favor, and you got a couple of solids again last night. You didn't get one from Seattle, who finally found a way to scratch out a win. But overall, it doesn't look like the writing's on the wall that you're not going to get that. And so you're going to have to be prepared for that. So therefore, you know, you kind of set it up like you just said, and I think you nailed it. I think the three guys that were, I don't know for Brian for sure, but I think we're all pretty much in agreement that I would do the exact same thing. I'd go Fromber, Hunter Brown, and then go to Kikuchi. And then you work your way from there. But I think from an organizational standpoint, Verlander's going to be in the mix. I think that the wild card is going to be interesting, because I think Kikuchi is better and better prepared right now and all the way ramped up. But I just have a feeling that they're going to try and squeeze Verlander between now and the end of the season into that third start if they need one.
I mean, I do agree that if it's a three-man rotation because you're in the wild card series, that's the three. It's Fromber, Hunter Brown, and Kikuchi in that order. I do feel like judging Arrighetti or basing it off last night, it's a little unfair, and it's a little bit of a box score hot take because you see the nine earned runs. But as Jeremy, you mentioned earlier, Jeremy Pena makes that play, which I thought should have been an error too, but they didn't. They gave him the earned runs. Then he's out of the first inning after three earned runs. Now, he could have continued to blow up after that, so we'll never know for sure if he would have rebounded and settled in. But if he gets out of that inning with three earned runs and settles in and maybe gives you kind of, Joel, what you're talking about, the Verlander, where, hey, you struggle, but you get through five, you give up four, then I don't think the conversation today is the same as what we're having now.
Well, I think it was already a tie with Kikuchi and Arrighetti, and maybe not even a tie. Like, it leaned towards Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the conversation we had the other day, is that if you're naming a three-man rotation, you're leaning to Kikuchi over Arrighetti. Arrighetti's over your four, and you're kicking out Justin Verlander. Now, the difference between, like, Arrighetti laboring and Verlander laboring is Verlander gives you innings.
He does.
He gives you innings. Arrighetti, and yes, he could have had some help defensively. He didn't make it out of the first. That was very Christian Javier, Game 7 ALCS of him. Like, yeah. Couldn't get out of the first inning.
Because now you're taxing the rest of the bullpen because you got to pick up seven and a third. And they're going to have to all try and do their best to try and just keep it where it's at, even though you know for all intent and purposes it's out of reach. And it just doesn't – it's not the same thing. It's like the difference between just throwing and the art of truly pitching, and Verlander can do that. I mean, he knew he was getting squeezed a little bit, but you know what? He still found a way to get out of bases loaded, nobody out, without having that kind of blowout like you saw last night, and he ate up some innings. So – It's a tough call to make, and Brian, maybe you're right, because maybe, you know, it's the one game sample size that kind of throws you off, but you can't afford to have a guy that blows up to that level. You can't afford to have a guy that, when things don't go exactly your way, that can't right the ship enough to kind of, you know, chart the waters and say, we're going to be okay. I'm gonna make sure that we have a chance in this ballgame.
I just don't know how you can put that out of your mind. Like, it was such a bad outing that you know that he's capable of giving up a 9 spot in the first. Like, I laughed a little bit whenever they went to break, and TK's like, Arrigetti gives up 9 in the first. Like, that's a dream. Like, that's a nightmare. That's a parody. Like, he gave up 9 in the first? What? Like, it was funny. Like, it was funny to me the way that he went to break saying Arrigetti with a 9 spot in the first. Like, okay. Scary. Like, you can't forget that. That's something that's going to live with you whenever you're deciding who's making postseason starts.
Well, we've seen it before, too.
Should you get there?
It hasn't been to that. That crossed my mind, by the way. But the fact that he gave up 9, yeah, that doesn't always happen. But we've seen him not be able to get out of the first before this season. So, yes, in August, he was rolling. He was fantastic. But overall, this isn't the first time we've seen this, which is why you probably raise your level of concern.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN 6030. Good thing is we brought Chaz back, so this lineup has been bolstered. They kind of had to because of the paternity leave for Jake Myers, and then they had to make that transaction today because you have to make a decision after the third day. So Myers was on the roster today but was not actually in Cincinnati. But you had nobody else to play center field. So, like, what are you going to do there? And then Key from L.A., what is tipping? Tipping's whenever you're giving up your pitches based on something that you're doing with the ball or the glove or your posture. The most famous one in Houston is Tyler Glasnow in the playoffs, where he was, like, holding the glove up to his letters on breaking ball, and he was putting the glove at his belt buckle with fastball. So it's very easy. If a hitter is able to pick that up, he's coming set at the belt buckle for a heater. Well, you know a heater's coming. He's coming set at the letters with a breaking ball. You know breaking ball is coming. And if you know the pitch, then it could be a bit advantageous because you can kind of spit on some pitches. You can kind of get your timing, all of that. So that's what tipping is, where the opponent has your pitches based on some sort of body manner that you're doing.
Yeah, you watch the Mariners staff do it. They've all gotten into the habit. I don't know if they're teaching it in spring training now or what, but the other thing is whenever guys were going to change their grip for a breaking pitch, a lot of times the glove would wiggle a little bit. Now you see all the Mariners guys, they're wiggling their glove the entire time before they start going into the delivery. So, yeah, I mean, it happens. You're right. The Glasnow is one that always comes to my mind, too. You hope he wasn't. These kind of things happen. They've happened in the past. Those things, you can clean that stuff up. I just don't trust him right now in the case of Arrigetti, regardless of whether he was tipping or not. I don't trust him to go out there in a playoff game and not have the better-than-average chance of blowing up a little bit.
My best guess is that he was not tipping, though. Like,
I agree with that.
He wasn't getting the swing and miss, but he also wasn't, like, yes, he gave up some hard contact. But usually if you're tipping, like, it's seed, laser, seed, rope, seed. Like, there was some weak contact in that first inning.
There was. No, there's no denying that. I was listening to the game on the way home, and Sparky was talking about the fact that the Reds have this guy that throws batting practice that tries to emulate as close as possible to a lot of guys' deliveries and everything and tries to get the same kind of velocity. And he thought that kind of was a key that the Reds were kind of comfortable with the way he delivered the baseball and where the pitches were going to be. Regardless of what it was, they were on it. Home run, double, and then the doors completely get blown off.
Well, there's pitching machines that you can set up now where it shows you the exact arm slot and the exact pitch, velo, spin that the pitcher is going to give you.
That's pretty cool.
It's insane. Yeah. Like the stuff that they have that benefits hitters, and it's still hard to hit. It's still hard to hit.
You know, we're not far away too from the video screen with the ball release point too, where they do that, where it looks like the actual pitcher on the mound.
Yeah. All right. 713-780 ESPN. It is a busy show. All the guests coming up. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Kevin Bowen. Go outside of enemy lines a little bit, beyond enemy lines, talk about this Colts team. What the folks in Indy are saying about this Colts team. I'm sure they're confident that they can win this division. I'm sure they're confident that they'll win Sunday at home against the Texans. 713-780-ESPN is the HRMP listener line. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by Kevin Bowen, 107.5 The Fan, that does morning radio out in Indy. Appreciate the time, Kevin. Thank you for joining us. What is the buzz in Indy? Because I think that these are the top two teams in the AFC South. I think the AFC South gets two teams into the playoffs this year, being the Texans and the Colts. What does the Indy fan base think? What are the expectations from them when it comes to this Colts team?
Yeah, I think it starts with just genuine intrigue, curiosity about their young quarterback and exactly, you know, what can he do. It's been a while since they've really had that at that position. And obviously last year it gets shortened to about four games. So I think that's where you start, you know, real intrigue and curiosity. It's like, wait a minute, if you win nine games with Gardner Minshew, theoretically, you know, shouldn't you win more with, you know, a guy that can offer some big playability? And then the other side of it is a little bit of like, hey, when is this going to happen under Chris Ballard? You know, the owner praises him majorly in a public setting, and yet you're currently in your biggest division drought and your biggest playoff win drought. You've been in about 30 years as a franchise. So I think those are probably the two prevailing thoughts with the fan base.
Kevin, can you talk a little bit about this whole rivalry thing and the off season, the last game of the regular season? We all know about that. We knew previously the Colts always seem to have the number of the Texans. But how big of a rivalry is it right now? We heard about some of your players and some of the quotes coming out as camp started about, you know, CJ and his podcasting and talking and how the season ended last year. How do you surmise all that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I would say probably before last season, I don't know if lately the Texans had a whole lot of ammo to do talking. And then after how last season ended, I don't know if the Colts have a lot of ammo to do a lot of talking in terms of defining a rivalry. But you know, certainly C.J. Stroud made some comments about the city of Indianapolis, and Dyer Franklin, who was Colts' defensive leader, probably the leader, frankly, on the football team, he's not one to hold back when, you know, those comments are going to be made. And, you know, you don't have, I think, public comments from Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud that are necessarily rivalry, you know, bait, if you will. But I do think with Richardson and Stroud, their relationship stayed back kind of the Elite 11 circuit a little bit there, and naturally, yeah, two teams in the same division and have quarterbacks drafted 2 and 4, you know, you're probably going to have some of that natural rivalry. So, you know, the fact that they play week 1 after what happened in week 18, I guess there's some of it there. But, you know, to me, it's a tad overblown. Maybe we'll look back and say, oh, the start of Ravens Steelers or something like that. But as of right now, I think it's just kind of a lot of chatter.
Kevin Bowen joining us on the HRMP guest line has been covering the Colts since 2011, so has seen a lot of Colts victories over the Houston Texans. And bringing up Anthony Richardson, I think it's so mysterious because we didn't see him much last year. Of course, he has the flaw of not being very accurate with the football, but I thought he was pretty good last year. And yes, he only played two series against the Texans, one of which was on a short field after a C.J. Stroud fumble. But there were two touchdown possessions where he was incredibly valuable to that Colts offense. And then, of course, what Steichen does offensively. We saw, you know, what he did with Jalen Hurts in Philly. How good do you expect Anthony Richardson to be this year?
Yeah, it's a great unknown. And I would argue the Colts probably have more volatility at their quarterback position than a lot of teams in the league, just with, I mean, the fact that at sample size in Houston, that's the only time he's played on the road in his NFL career. I mean, the Colts had a guy on their team last year named Jake Martin who played more snaps than Anthony Richardson. I pictured to guess 99% of Colts fans would think Jake Martin's a dude in the State Farm commercial. So it's just, it's tough to gauge, you know? I mean, really, he's unlike any first-round pick we've seen a quarterback in this league's history, considering the lack of experience he had at Florida and just the lack of, you know, really great individual success in that one season as well. So I think what Colts fans believe and what, you know, the Colts believe is you can hit home runs with him, and you can hit home runs with his legs, and you can hit it with his arm in terms of taking some shots down the field. You're going to live with the inability to get on base every at-bat. That's just not going to be there. He's not going to be some methodical 70% passer. But if you can sprinkle in the home runs, you can live with it as long as, in the baseball analogy, the outs aren't, you know, strikeouts, aren't big turnovers. You know, he had a pick six, for example, in their preseason, you know, dress rehearsal game. He had a fumble that, you know, could have obviously, you know, been an impactful turnover had that been a regular season game. So, again, big play potential, I think they feel like should be there. And then it's, you know, can you make sure that the misses are just incompletions and you end those drives and punts? If you can do that, I think you can live with something and really build something.
Kevin, I'm curious. Last year, we kicked it around the other day. Jonathan Taylor, not that it was a lost season, but it was basically a rough season because of the fact you had the contract issues, you had the injuries. But now with him healthy, the contract behind him, and being through, you know, ready and ready to go and healthy at the start of the season, how big of an impact is that going to have for the squad?
Yeah, I frankly don't think we're talking about it enough here in our market, which might sound crazy to you guys considering he went for 188 in that season finale. But you know, this time last year, Jonathan Taylor was the Ja'Marr Chase. He was the Brandon Ayuk story. It was the contract saga, and then it was, you know, just kind of a weird injury situation all year long. And then he erupts in week 18, and you're like, oh, wow, I forgot that at one point this dude, you know, was the league's leading rusher by 500 yards, you know, based off who was in second in the NFL just a couple years ago. So he's a special, special talent. And it was funny, I was talking to him today in the locker room, and I'm like, you know, I think I know Wisconsin football decently well enough. You've never played with anything like Anthony Richardson at quarterback. I mean, when you think about it, the Colts have never had a quarterback with Richardson's legs, certainly here in the last couple of years. And Wisconsin football with Taylor did not have that dual threat type of guy either. So, you know, that weapon, I think, is something that can be really, really potent. And in a way, you know, Houston should know it's coming. They saw Richardson at his best in just a quarter last season, and then they obviously saw Taylor with an incredible individual effort there in week 18. Now it's a combination of those two guys together. I think the Colts bank on that being lethal, and if it is, I think it's the team that can certainly, you know, play into the month of January with meaningful games.
To be fair, Wisconsin doesn't really produce a ton of great athletes.
Easy.
We do know that. Kevin Bowen joining us on the HRNP guest line. Colts win the AFC South if what?
If that lethal combination of Richardson and Taylor is healthy, and if their defensive line is as good as they've invested into it. They have four first-round picks and three second-round picks along their defensive line. They have a lot of money invested into the group as well. And that's, to me, the biggest key for them, certainly on Sunday, because they lack so much in the secondary. But really, it's got to be a key all year long. So I would say that is the biggest. Those are two things. You know, Taylor and Richardson help on the offensive side of the ball, and then that D-line on the defense.
You guys had a good draft. We've been talking about some, you know, a lot of the different things that are looking good for the Colts. From your perspective, looking at the Texans, you saw what they were a year ago. Now you see what they did in this offseason, whether it was the draft, whether it was free agency, or whether it was the trades that brought you Diggs and Mixon. What's your opinion of this Texans team going into this season?
Well, I think their biggest strength is the Colts' biggest weakness, and that, at least matchup-wise for Sunday, that would be what the Texans have at wide out and what the Colts lack in the secondary. So I think that's what kind of strikes fear. And you know, the team that just won the division, and they go out and they add a 1,000-yard rusher, they add a 1,000-yard wideout. In a way, they're kind of adding Tank Dell. You know, I'm just reminding your audience. It'd probably be to remind our audience a little bit more of that. And then Danielle Hunter was someone the Colts really pursued. So I think there's a lot there. I get why all the hype is there, and the Colts really are just kind of running it back and hoping that Richardson obviously gives them a jolt. So I think all the public praise, all of it is very, very deserved. C.J. Stroud is an incredible talent we saw here in Big Ten country and certainly lived up to it as a rookie.
Kevin, we appreciate the time. Great stuff. I'm sure we'll do it again as the season goes on and we get the rematch here in Houston. Enjoy the game Sunday and enjoy opening day in the NFL.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Kevin Bowen joining us on the HRNP guest line. It's funny, he brought up Jake Martin, formerly known as Jacob Martin, formerly a Houston Texan. Played in more snaps than Anthony Richardson did last year. Former Texan Jacob Martin, now known as Jake Martin, played in more snaps last year than Anthony Richardson. He's an enigma, Anthony Richardson is.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously, whether we follow him as closely as Kevin does or you just watch it from afar, we know what he did here, but we also know there are plenty of question marks, and I think they're all centered around his ability to just, you know, be able to put the football and throw the football where it needs to be. You can't deny his athleticism. You can't deny his ability to run the football. And you know you got a coach that's going to tailor-make a game plan for him, especially with a guy like Taylor behind him. Can you get him into passing situations? Can you make him throw the football?
Yeah, I think, like, you always want an early lead in football, but, like, especially against the Colts. Like, force them into situations where he has to beat you with his arm. You spot them a 10-0 lead.
Oh, man.
They're running a bit. You're playing right into their hands. So this week, more than most weeks, get the early lead against the Colts. And plus 550 yards, too, by the way, Anthony Richardson. I need you to surpass 550 rushing yards on the year. And Brandon will be very happy with one, Anthony Richardson.
Start next week.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd like them to run for 175 yards in a loss. That'd be great for
me. Okay, as long as they lose.
That'd be great for me. All right, Astros got swept today against Cincinnati. They got swept against Cincinnati. Mariners already lead the A's. This division lead is shrinking in real time, right before our eyes. What is wrong with the Astros? How much are you sweating the fact they got swept against the Reds? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. DirecTV and DirecTV Stream customers, you have lost ESPN, including college football, Monday Night Football, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, SportsCenter, and more. Take action now. Call 844-KEEP-MY-ESPN or visit keepmyespn.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Tyler and Conroe, I do not understand the intrigue around Anthony Richardson. He was not good in the SEC and wasn't a good quarterback last year. The answer is simple. Raw athleticism. That's why. The dude's a freak. He's a freak athlete. Like, he's one of the freakiest athletes that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. We were just talking about it. You hope that there's truth to the fact that he struggles still to throw the football. I don't know how much you read into what happened between, you know, in the joint practices with the Bengals and all the crap talk that was going back and forth. But you know damn well that if you put him in space, he's hard to bring down. He's athletic as hell, and he can make plays. And then when you put one of the top five running backs in the league behind him, that's a problem because you got a guy as an offensive coordinator and head coach that knows exactly how to use those guys, and he proved it in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that might be the biggest kicker of all. And, like, we were talking about this before the draft. I do not want Anthony Richardson with Shane Steichen. I'm not scared of Anthony Richardson if he lands anywhere else. But pairing with Shane Steichen is like, it's a cheat code. It's a cheat code.
It's the second coming of Greg Roman with Lamar Jackson. When Lamar Jackson could have gone a lot of places, and you would have questioned whether the system and the fit and the playbook and the coordinator would have worked. But when you took Greg Roman into the equation and then they completely redid their playbook to just completely focus on the strengths of one Lamar Jackson, they went nuts. And I think this has the same capability of working because of that thing, with Steichen being able to game plan for a running-type quarterback and Richardson having that freakish athleticism.
Grinding on coffee and whiskey. I'm doing half of that. And if he can stay healthy. That is a big, big thing. That is a big thing when it comes to Anthony Richardson. Never has really been healthy in his football playing career. So we'll see. You know, we'll see Mike Trout. And, you know, a lot of times when you get freaks athletically like that, they tend to get hurt. Bo Jackson was so athletic, he ran out of his hip. Zion Williamson was so athletic at Duke, he ran out of his shoe. Like, you know, sometimes there's guys that are that freaky, but a lot of, strain on the body, and it's tough for them to stay healthy. Astros get swept. They lose to the Reds. Not only did they lose to the Reds today, they got shut out by the Reds. They got beat 1-0 by the Reds. Now, the Reds do own the Astros. When you look up the Reds on the Wikipedia, or when you look up the Astros on the Wikipedia and it says owner, it doesn't say Jim Crane. It says the Cincinnati Reds. The Astros have not beaten the Reds in the golden era.
Yeah, since 2016.
It's insane.
They were swept twice in the two series that they've played them recently in the last couple of years. And you speak about the owner. Well, guess what? The co-owner and mayor has to be Ty France. Mm-hmm. The fact that Ty France went into his last at bat 9-for-11 in the series, mm-hmm. We were talking about when the Mariners cut bait with him and ended up trying to replace him by adding some guys at the deadline. You're like, well, one, that's great for the Astros because he was always an Astros killer in Seattle. But would you kick the tires on a Ty France to see if he could play first base too? He didn't do anything to tell me any otherwise with the way he played. Maybe it's just against the Astros, but But good Lord, he was ripping the baseball.
He's been really good as a Red, actually. And the Astros probably should have traded for him. Mariners DFA'd him. Reds traded for Ty France before he went through the waiver process. Didn't cost him much. And would Seattle have traded France to a division rival? Probably not. So he might not even have been attainable. But yeah, he's been good as a Red. Yes, he does own the Astros. King of Twitch. He got a little sassy with Twitter. And he's like, why would you trade for him? Well, one, so the Astros don't have to face him. But then secondly, as a Red, and this was going into today's game, so this will actually be enhanced some by his performance today. 99 at-bats, he's hitting .303 with an .825 OPS as a member of the Cincinnati Reds. Like, the dude can hit. Seattle's just, like, where hitters go to die. Leave Seattle, you're like Teoscar Hernandez. Hernandez last year was awful, was bad. His numbers were poor. With the Dodgers this year, he's been pretty stinking good. Ty France, as a Mariner this year, .223 hitter, .662 OPS, and 111 plate appearances is a solid sample. .303 hitter as a member of the Reds with an .825 OPS. Ty France is a solid offensive player, and whenever they're facing the Houston Astros, he's a right-handed Babe Ruth.
Yeah, and when they got Turner and they got a Rosarena, they had a hit here or there where people were taking notice, but overall, those guys were struggling early on with the Mariners as well. It's a tough ballpark to hit. It's a pitcher's ballpark in a lot of ways. And it's just one of those situations where you look at a guy that was an all-star just a few short years ago in Ty France and said, that's a guy that can help somebody. That's a guy that hitting just doesn't completely go away to that level unless you're a guy named Abreu. But overall, I would have kicked the tires on him. I would have tried to get him. You're right. I don't think the Mariners would have traded him to you. But if there was a way you could have gotten your hands on him, you could have done a lot worse than what he's been able to do.
Oh, yeah. He would have helped you. I mean, you're using Zach DiZinzo as a – not that I dislike Zach DiZinzo, but you're using Zach DiZinzo as a first-base platoon option. Ty France would have been a better option. Maybe they did kick the tires and the Mariners were just, you know, not going to do it because they're trying to chase you, which I get. Like, that is obviously a plausible scenario, but yes, you should have called. And maybe they did. 5798, is it fair to say the Astros were single-handedly swept by Ty France? You could say a good chunk of it, but the Astros offense did not score a single run today. They didn't. They wasted Hunter Brown's great start, 6 shutout innings. Rhett Lauder, who is a good pitcher, has tons of promise. A rookie, though, making what, like his third big league start. Astros couldn't muster a single run against the Cincinnati Reds today.
You're not going to win a lot of games when you get 4 hits over 9 innings.
You're not going to win any games where you score 0-9.
Right. I'm saying. So you had the combination. The Reds only had 6 hits, but they had the one big bomb by France. The Astros got shut down. They don't hit the baseball. That's a big problem. And you're right. They wasted Hunter Brown today because Hunter Brown is a slump stopper. He's a guy, a streak stopper. He's a guy that did exactly what you needed him to do today. And unfortunately, Abreu, you know, couldn't do it what he normally does. When you're getting in most games, if you can't score at all, you're right. You're not going to win. But you hold the Reds to only one run, you should win that ball game.
Yeah, that was a brutal game today, a brutal series for the Astros, who fall to 75-65. Abreu doesn't look himself lately. I'm wondering if that workload has led to some diminishing returns from Brian Abreu, like leads the league in appearances. Like, should they? It's tough for a spotter because, like, you're climbing out of such a hole. But I'm wondering if that workload is starting to catch up to Abreu because he hasn't looked the same. He has not looked as good over the last 30 days or so. So that's a bit concerning because he and Presley have not looked great. But also the fact of, like, what this does for you in terms of the race. One, it all of a sudden gives Seattle life again. Like, Seattle, you were able to build the lead to 6.5. They have a chance, and they're winning right now, to make it 4.5 at the end of the day. And they have a 3-game series against the Astros. So you have brought life back to the Seattle Mariners. And then secondly, that whole, like, avoid the wild card round by getting a top 2 seed and getting a bye out of the wild card round. It's not completely kiss a goodbye, but boy, it's starting. It's fleeting. It's on its way out the door. The chances of you getting one of those top 2 seeds have taken a huge hit with the way that you've produced this over the series.
Yeah, you can't say you haven't had chances. You've had chances because the Mariners just keep giving you everything that you need to be able to just kind of step on their throat and put them to bed. And instead, you leave them hanging around. And if you leave them hanging around long enough, you might actually be in a race one more time when you sorely don't need to be in one. Coming down the home stretch, you've done everything to dig yourself out of this hole and get yourself in a place of command, and now suddenly you can't command the last series against the Reds, and you're letting, like you said, the buys get away. Uh-huh. You're letting Seattle believe they still aren't dead, and that's the scariest proposition because your schedule's tougher than Seattle's, And you just got to handle your business. And now you're coming home to play an Arizona team that's no slouch either.
They're like red hot too. Yeah. Like they're like 30-13, I think I heard TK say at the end of the game. So like that's going to be challenging. Astros kind of play to their competition though. So like it wouldn't stun me if they take 2 of 3 against Arizona after being swept at sub-500 Cincinnati, who for some reason owns the Astros. And now you're 5 games back of the Guards too, by the way, for that second spot in the American League. So like it doesn't look great. It doesn't look great to get one of those top two spots. Now, does that mean the Astros can't win at all? No. I mean, the Astros could sweep through the wild card, be fresh going into the division series, and then run the gauntlet. Like it doesn't rule them out. I just don't like that you would have to play that 3-game series. I think it does make it more daunting. Now you have to beat another good team in a series, in a 3-game series on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, it's the least ideal path to get where you want to go that you've been to and you want to get back to. And it's unfortunate because it looked like it was right there within your grasp. The Yankees aren't playing great baseball. The Mariners are doing you favors. They're taking care of them. You know, some of the lesser thens, when you talk about what the Tigers and the Angels were able to do to the Mariners, you're like, okay, we were talking about it the other day. Maybe you lose focus and stop looking at Seattle and start just focusing on Cleveland and New York, knowing, hey, those are the teams where now you're chasing again, but with another, carrot to be dangled out there that could be really meaningful for you. And instead, where anything can happen, you're going to play a 3-game series. That's not ideal.
Yeah, it's looking like a long shot for the Astros to be a top two. And then now suddenly the AL West is a race again after it looked like we were crowning them division champs 3 days ago. Ocho, guys, I take full responsibility for Eric Geddy's performance yesterday. Every time I brag on him, he pitches like bad word. No more bragging, no more Eric Goedy.
Okay.
I don't think you can brag after a 9 spot in the first. Couldn't get out of the first inning. Give up 9 runs.
Yeah, that was just ugly. And, Oach, you do you, but regardless, we just need him to be a whole hell of a lot better going down the stretch, regardless what the playoff matchups look like.
4-2-5-5, Abreu's been shaky at best, guys. You're right. He has been. And I'm worried that it's the workload. And, can you get him right before the playoffs start if you are in the playoffs? Hopefully they can find form all at the right time. You just need the Astros to click on all cylinders at the right time. The pitching was clicking in August, find that form. And I'm still confident in the pitching staff. You need Abreu and Presley to find it in October. You need the offense to click on all cylinders. The Astros can be tough if they click on all cylinders. No. I think the Astros win it all if they click on all cylinders.
I definitely think that they are the team to beat. And we talked about this. It's crazy. And people question, well, why do you guys have differing opinions from day to day? It's because the team looks different from day to day and because every game is so hyper important. You're not coasting right now. Just because you have this lead against the Mariners, every game is hyper important. The Royal Series is already so far in your rearview mirror that now you're focusing on as hot as they were coming out of Minute Maid Park with that sweep. They look like a totally different ball club playing at coming out of Cincinnati. Now, because of the fact that you have the talent that you have, and you're presumably going to get Kyle Tucker back in the next couple of days, you're adding a piece that no other team is going to be able to add. If he comes in and he bolsters your lineup and he gives you that cornerstone right fielder, and now you have options, you have a deeper bench, you have more, you have more choices to work with if you're Espada. And like you said, if that pitching staff continues to be what they were all in the month of August, you should be the front runner for the American League.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sport too, though. Like, how many times have we seen the Dodgers win 128 games and then get ousted in the division series? Like, it happens. Braves, it happens. So it's the sport on top of that. It's the fact that the Astros have been volatile, inconsistent. Some days they look like the best team in baseball. Some days, like especially early in the year, and they look like they're one of the worst teams in all of baseball. And then you throw in the fact that it's so coin flip sport in a potential 3-game series. The Astros, like especially in 2024, I think they could win it all. I think they could be eliminated in 2 games. Like, that's the way the Astros have been this year.
That's the scary part. You know what? I firmly believe they should be the favorite in the American League, and I firmly believe they're going to get back to another World Series. But anything can happen, and the hot team can beat you in a 3-game series. You're not talking about, a longer series where normally the cream rises to the top and the better team wins. That is a massive fear of mine, that they can get bumped out. And again, because at home, last year they struggled. This year, Yordan has struggled at home. He's your best bat. Anything can happen. If you play the wrong team at the right time, it's definitely something that scares me.
It's not even that, though. It's just like, do the bad Astros show up for 2 days? Like, the Astros have done this all year. Like, the Astros have had weeks. They've had a couple of weeks at the beginning of the year. They've, even whenever they were playing better, they've had 3-game series, a la Cincinnati, where they just don't show up. Like, and yes, tip the cap, all that stuff. But you do that for 3 days in October, goodbye. Your season's done.
I will say this. The one thing that does give me the most hope, even in a three-game series, is the fact that Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown lately don't look like they're going to falter. And if you put the ball in those guys' hands, I feel really, really good from a pitching perspective.
Like today at Cincinnati?
Hunter Brown. But I'm just saying, Hunter Brown, if he does that, I will live with the chances that at home they're going to score a run or two.
Lee Sterling last week won four of the five games he gave to us. Wisely, Brian didn't play the one loss, put it in a parlay, won lots and lots of money. Didn't buy us dinner with those lots and lots of money, but won lots and lots of money. Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, going to hand out some winners next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Time now to bring in Lee Sterling. Paramount Sports had a big week last week. 4-1. Brian took all the winners and somehow ducked the loser and made a little parlay out of it, Lee, and won lots of money. Now, he didn't share that money with his host. He didn't, bring up lunch. He didn't do any of that. But Brian was very thankful for your success last week, Lee.
Oh, yeah. When you spend 300-400 hours during the summer, you want to come out winning the first week or else you just start questioning, what you were looking at. So we went 4-1 on the show. We went 8-1 for our clients. And it was a lot of fun. So now, and that wasn't even the NFL starting this week, so should be a great weekend.
Let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. Yep. And let's start in the college side of things. Some fun games this week. Let's begin at Oklahoma State, Arkansas. Oklahoma State giving up the 8 points against the Hogs. What are you making of this one?
Both teams were impressive last week. The Cowboys won 44-20 over the FCS champion South Dakota State team. And the Razorbacks blanked Arkansas Pine Bluff 70-0. I have a feeling South Dakota State was really down this year. Arkansas offensive line, they're going to have to run the football. They only returned two starters on paper, but they do welcome in three transfers from Tennessee, Michigan State, and San Jose State. And every starter is huge, 306 to 349 pounds. I have trust in head coach Sam Pittman to make this unit a strength as he's produced seven first-round draft picks since 2013 with 15 players drafted. They're going up against the weakness for Oklahoma State, which is run defense. They allowed 4.6 yards per carry last year. This Arkansas team has looked pretty darn good as long as they don't get worn down. They just don't have the depth on defense. That's the key. If they can slow down the Oklahoma State running game, then they should have some success. Alan Bowman is good when they're running the football, and he can use play action, but only completed barely 60% of his throws last year for only 6.8 yards per attempt and only 13 touchdowns here. I like Taylen Green. I like the quarterback for Arkansas. He is a dual threat, and I think Arkansas, I think they got a shot here. I'm going to call for the upset. Why not? Arkansas outright 34-30 over Oklahoma State.
Wow, that's a big one. And also another big one, I love this game. Texas coming in with confidence against a Michigan team that, quite frankly, to me, was very unimpressive. That's a big game at the Big House. How you see that one breaking down?
Yeah, I think Michigan's going to lose two, three, maybe four games this year. Problem, first off, is quarterback. I mean, Davis Warren is a former walk-on, J.J. McCarthy. I just think that the loss is going to be a lot. I mean, Warren is a game manager. On their four scoring drives, two touchdowns, two field goals, they only covered 26 to 47 yards. Their defense is going to be great. They're going to have two guys probably picked in the top 15, but the offense is so bad, I think it's going to put a lot of stress on this defense. And with Warren being a game manager's manager, I think Texas's defense is going to suffocate him, maybe get a couple takeaways here. They're not chopped liver either. They were good last week with Michigan's defense only giving up 9 rushing yards to Fresno. But Texas's defense gave up only 9 rushing yards to Iowa State last year on the road. Texas has actually played better on the road. They won 7 straight non-conference road games here. I think it's sitting at 7, 7.5 for a reason. I like Texas 28-14.
Okay. Lee Sterling, Paramount yep. Sports. Last week you broke my heart, but you were right doing so, and you picked against my Cougs. Houston heading to Norman this weekend. Sooners 29-point favorites. My Cougars have a shot this week.
I'd love to see Oklahoma get knocked off, but I just think it's a bad matchup here. Houston's changed coaches here 6 times in 10 years. I think Willie Fritz is going to be the guy. I know he's 64, but I've seen him build. I know some kids that have played for him at Tulane. They believe in him. It's just going to take time here. They got to find a quarterback. And Donovan Smith was awful. I think Chris might end up playing here. They just need some consistency from that position. Once you fall behind Oklahoma, you're in trouble here. So I think he's going to rebuild this team. It's just going to take some time here. Hate to say it, Oklahoma 51-10.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's get to the NFL. Right, kind of right down in your neck of the woods. You got two teams that either could finish as low as third in their division, or they could win it. You got the Dolphins. You got the Jags. Dolphins giving 3 at this point. What do you see there?
So usually the Dolphins get off to quick starts. They're 15-3 straight up, 12-6 as a home favorite the last 3 years. Frequently, it's the heat. I mean, early in the season, that heat and humidity in South Florida just does a number on these visiting teams. But Jacksonville, you know, they're in North Florida. The climate isn't much different here. Miami's got injuries galore. Only Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, really the only receivers that are right now pretty healthy. So they might go with a lot of one running back and two tight end sets. Look for that in this game. And their offensive line, nothing special. Whereas the Jags did a good job picking up Gabe Davis from the Bills, Devin Duvernay from the Ravens here. And also, don't forget, Mac Jones came over as the backup, knows this Miami defense well after facing him the last couple years. Twice a year. I think he's going to help out Trevor Lawrence here, especially in this scenario. I like Jacksonville. Pull the upset here, 27-24.
Lee Sterling, ParamountSports.com, handing out winners. Last week crushed it for you guys. Going to crush it again this weekend. A game that I'm excited for. Everybody in the city is excited for. I think two playoff teams meeting in Indy on Sunday. Texans, a road favorite against the Colts. Is that okay? Is that fair here?
I think so. I think the Colts team has got a lot of problems. I mean, first off, Josh Downs, the number two receiver, he's going to miss the early part of the year. He's got a high ankle sprain. What Houston did in the offseason is incredible. I know they had money, but I think they just got the right guys. Bring in Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon. Now they've got maybe the best receiving core in the NFL with Diggs, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell. And then the defense, which was their weakness. They bring in Danielle Hunter, DeNico Autry, and also linebacker Azeez Al-Shaahir. I mean, you put them with Will Anderson and Derek Stingley, and this is going to be a strong unit here. And how bad has Indianapolis been to start the year? Well, they're 0-10. They've lost 10 straight open the year, and they're 1-9 against the spread here. So I think it's going to take Indianapolis some time if they want to come together. I think Houston's going to be firing on all cylinders. Sometimes you got to lay it if you want to play it. Texans 31, Colts 21.
Love that, Lee. Look, we already highlighted how successful you were. You've been successful as long as we've been talking to you. You had a great first week. Tell everybody how they can get connected with you so they can capitalize on this.
Yep, just go to the website, ParamountSports.com. NFL is actually our bread and butter. I'm going to give them away a free game. Kansas City, Baltimore. Never done this opening night. Never given this game away for free. It's always so big. You want to get Kansas City and Baltimore, be one of the first 5 callers right now. 800-400-9741. I love this game tonight. Give them Kansas City and Baltimore on me. 800-400-9741. And if you want to hop on board, we hit our 40-unit best bet last week. Historically, these have been the bread and butter. In fact, going back the last 15 years, we're 66-23 on our best bets, our 40 to 50 unit plays. We hit Nebraska last week. We have another one in college football going on Saturday. You want to get this game. You want to get all our games, 9 to probably 13 games every single week. Just $497 for a month. We call it September to Remember, $497 for a month. for the entire season through the Super Bowl, $14.97. That works out to just $60 a weekend, just one place. And we have a lot of other free pick videos up to check out. ParamountSports.com. We've got free pick videos on Nebraska, Colorado, Iowa against Iowa State, and also Tennessee, North Carolina State. Check out those free videos. They're like 2 minutes in length. Up and available right now. Everything is ParamountSports.com.
Killed it last week, and I have no doubt he'll kill it again. Lee Sterling, thank you very much. You can find him at ParamountSports.com. We'll talk to Lee next Thursday, hopefully off another 80% winning weekend like he had this past week. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Time now or forever hold your truth. What are your predictions for the NFL season? Who is your Super Bowl champion? Who's participating in the Super Bowl? Who's in the conference title games, division champs, playoff teams? Speak now. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.